That's all she ever wanted to do as a child, was to grow up to be an emergency medicine physician. And she was so proud of it.
Welcome to the Built on Results podcast, a series of conversations about the issues, the advocacy, and the wins on behalf of emergency physicians. Corey Feist is CEO and co-founder of the Dr. Lorna Breen Foundation in Charlottesville, Virginia, the organization named after his sister-in-law who took her own life. She had been worried about the stigma of seeking mental health treatment. Understandably overwhelmed by the illness and death she witnessed in her own emergency department during the pandemic. In Lorna's memory, Feist says the work now is to make sure others get help through approval of funding of a new federal law and work to remove mental health questions from physician licensing and credentialing applications. This is Episode 8, Lorna's Legacy.
Dr. Lorna Breen was an emergency medicine physician, a physician leader at New York Presbyterian Hospital in New York City, specifically within the Allen Hospital facility. Lorna was a 49-year-old, thriving, top of her game, crazy aunt to 8 nieces and nephews. She was a salsa dancer. She was a world traveler. And she was stricken down at the peak of the pandemic in New York City because she feared the stigma of getting mental health treatment after she was overwhelmed with the volume of death and dying that she observed treating patients in the emergency department at New York Presbyterian Hospital.
Such a heavy load to carry.
And it was too heavy a load, particularly when you layer upon it that she was recovering from COVID herself. And she had been very sick, not hospitalized, but almost hospitalized, and had been out of the workplace for about 10 days trying to recuperate. But as soon as she was afebrile for about 12 hours, she said, "Put me back in. I need to go be a part of this response." And it was really her depleted nature on top of what she was observing that was just too much to bear. And then when you layer on top of that, the culture in medicine around really not being supportive of help seeking, particularly during that time, these were things that really compounded and to create this perfect storm of just awful things that created the environment that caused her to take her life. You know, it's almost unbelievable still many years out from that to think about the fact that this person who had never had a mental health condition, she had never done anything in her life that would you'd look at and go, "Oh, that's a risk factor for suicide or a mental health condition." No, her singular risk factor for suicide was that she was a female physician. And had we known that as a family, maybe we could have done more for her, although we did the best that we could with the circumstances.
And Lorna was worried about the stigma of asking for help while trying to do her job at the same time.
Yeah, these are big things. And what I would just share with you about Lorna's story and the reason why we created the Lorna Breen Foundation, it really wasn't to honor my sister-in-law. It was because of thousands of people that reached out in response to her death. And they were the ones who elevated this issue on a national scale. At the time, I had been the chief executive officer of the University of Virginia Physicians Group. So I was deeply embedded in the clinical operations and trying to make the environment one where our workforce could thrive. But I was completely ignorant to the mental health challenges that our healthcare workers have. And so Lorna's experience was my first realization that this is a real issue, not just around asking for help, but also the professional repercussions of getting help in the event that you need to get mental health treatment as a physician or other licensed health worker in the United States. And so this whole experience was so eye-opening that we could not step back from it once we then were thrust into this national limelight, sharing Lorna's story over and over and over again. But I want to emphasize that we created the Lorna Breen Foundation because of the others and because we were trying to help not only protect our healthcare workforce, but because we had heard from them very clearly that they were asking and calling for a new day in healthcare, one where it supports them as healers so they can just simply do the job that they trained for.
So the foundation is created, and then what happens?
Well, we really we're trying to figure out the best and most impactful way that our foundation could contribute to an environment in healthcare where everybody has an interest group. We like to say there's more silos in healthcare than there are in Iowa, but the reality is that we really were trying to figure out what the best place was. And so to that end, one of the first calls we received was from our United States Senator, Tim Kaine, who saw analogies between the experience of our healthcare workers and the armed services. His son had been in the Marines and actually was, I believe, currently serving at the time. And so he simply asked the question, what are we doing to care for those who are caring for us? And that culminated in the creation of the Dr. Lorna Breen Healthcare Provider Protection Act, the first ever federal law that creates programs to support and retain health workers in their current roles.
And we're marking the passage of the law today, March 18th.
The law was signed March 18, 2022, and it was just reauthorized and extended for another 5-year period of time until 2030, recently by bipartisan members of Congress and signed into law by the president. One of the things that I think is important to note about the Lorna Breen Act is that there are billions of dollars that are infused into the healthcare economy from the federal government on workforce creation, physicians, nurses, and other health workers. There are no other dollars other than the programs for the Lorna Breen Act, which are focused on retaining the workforce. So you have a huge imbalance that Senator Kaine and a bipartisan group of senators and members of the House of Representatives were trying to begin to rectify. And so I say begin to rectify because the Lorna Breen Act was really the starting pillar of a series of pillars to create a comprehensive health policy that really supports our healers. The Lorna Breen Act did two very important things. The first was that it created a series of grant opportunities for organizations around the country to take care of their own, to do the best job that they could to supplement their existing resources, create new environments where the workforce could be taken care of. A lot of that manifested in peer support programs, mental health support programs, among others. There was a little bit of it looking at operational and systems drivers, but most of the grant recipients really focused on shoring up or making more resilient an already, frankly, very resilient but broken workforce. The second piece of the Lorna Breen Act was the creation of innovative training materials for healthcare leaders so that they could understand how to redesign the systems and processes that create burnout that contribute to the mental health challenges of our workforce. You know, one of the things that we've learned doing this work is that burnout manifests in the individual health worker, but it's created by the system. And yet the message that we continue to share with our workforce is be more resilient, use this meditation app, go to yoga. All of those things are important, but they never get at the root cause of the issue. So the Lorna Breen Act really was coming at this problem in a comprehensive way, albeit a small way at the beginning, because you know when you create law, it can take decades. We did this in about 2 years, but you have to start somewhere. And that's what the Lorna Breen Act did. And we hope that it will, now that it has been extended, it now needs to be funded. And so we hope that those programs will be funded. We're working with Congress as well as ACEP, helping significantly on the advocacy front to infuse more dollars so that we can work on retaining our critical health workforce, as well as training and retraining healthcare leaders so that they're in a position to redesign this coal mine, as opposed to ask the canaries to be stronger, if you will.
What's been ACEP's role in supporting the foundation and the family along this journey?
ACEP has been a critical partner, and I'm not just saying that because I'm talking to ACEP right now. I tell everybody that. You know, Lorna was a very active physician at New York Presbyterian and Columbia, where she held faculty privileges. But outside of that, she was really focused on snowboarding and cello and world travel, except for ACEP. ACEP was her place where she came together. She had leadership positions, and she always told us as a family, I'm going to another ACEP meeting. These are my people. And so we always knew about ACEP well before she took her life and we got involved more formally with ACEP. And so to that end, I appreciate the question where you say the foundation and the family. Early days, this was the family that I was, you know, this was the family. And you all were supporting us to a great degree. And really that began transitioning to the foundation when we began working with you all to create the Lorna Breen Act. I mean, ASAP really was the first convener of a coalition of interprofessional organizations in healthcare to say, hey, we need to wrap our arms around the workforce here and get this law passed. And ASAP has taken really a key leadership role. And Ryan McBride from your team has been really there since our inception, just pushing on anybody who will listen, as well as bringing our coalition of member healthcare organizations together to really just make this a big priority. And without ASAP's help, I don't know that we would have had the Lorna Breen Act even signed into law in 2022, let alone extended this most recent time. So you have been a critical partner in that. And I hope that your ASAP members are very proud of the work that you all have done in this policy space.
How have Lorna's colleagues reacted to the work that's been accomplished these last few years?
We hear from the physicians, the nurses, the family members, and many, many others in emergency medicine. You know, Lorna's community was a community of emergency medicine clinicians. And I use the clinician term broadly because healthcare is a team sport. And she was very concerned about the well-being of everybody on her team always, regardless of whether they had an MD, an RN, or something else behind their name. And what we continue to hear from across emergency medicine is how important this work is and how much need there still remains to bridge the gap between what is now known as solutions to this problem and the actual implementation of it, so they really feel it on a day-to-day basis. You know, that's the kind of thing that we really hear from them. And I will say, when we think back to Lorna's story and the stories that we heard following her passing, one thing that continues to stick out are these inappropriate questions that health workers are asked when they go to get credentialed at a hospital or they get licensed to provide care in a state. And that's something we hear from emergency medicine, emergency nurses, and many others, which is, we have to navigate a whole minefield of inappropriate questions about our mental health past. And that's not okay. That you don't see that in other professions. And so another area, frankly, that ASAP has been a huge help with us is removing inappropriate and stigmatizing questions from licensing applications and credentialing applications, so much so that we're now benefiting 3 million people in the United States from this work. And by people, I really mean health workers. So the ASAP community has been critical in making sure that we are listening to what the problems are, we are aligned with ASAP in terms of what the solutions are, and we're moving forward from a policy perspective, both at a state as well as a federal level.
How do you think Lorna would feel about the progress that's been made so far?
The best person to answer that question is her little sister, my wife, Jennifer. So I'll quote Jennifer when she was asked that question recently, and she said, I think she'd be delighted. I think that Lorna was somebody who cared so deeply about making healthcare as efficient, as high quality as possible. That's all she ever wanted to do as a child, was to grow up to be an emergency medicine physician. And she was so proud of it. And to have her name associated with the first federal law that creates, you know, programs to support others, I think she would be delighted and smitten by it. And it's really unfortunate that it has taken the tragic loss of Lorna, as well as hundreds of other physicians and nurses each and every year, to keep this issue, you know, front and center for our healthcare workforce each and every day.
Finally, what do you need emergency physicians to do next?
You know, I love emergency physicians because you are quick to act. You are very quick to act. Our chief medical officer is Dr. Stephanie Simmons, and she is an emergency medicine physician, and she gets right in there. So I love this work for emergency medicine because there is so much to do. The very first thing I would do is I'd reach out to your member of Congress through our website and make sure they know that you think this is important. Share your story. Another thing that you can do is get our Champions Challenge badge for your organization if your organization doesn't have that badge.
That's the badge that is awarded to organizations that remove inappropriate mental health questions. And if your organization has the badge, communicate the badge to others. So those are two categories of things in the policy space. But most important to all of this, it's critical that you take care of yourself first. This is the oxygen mask principle, after all. And recognize that there is hope on the horizon. Change is happening, albeit not fast enough for anybody, but change is happening. So stick with us, take action in this channeled way, and we know that we can make healthcare better for both our healers and our patients.
Every day from now until March 28th, we'll feature a different story about the work of ACEP and its chapters. We'll talk about advocacy wins and work still underway to make sure you can do your job. We kicked off the series on March 11th. You can listen to past conversations and read more about ACEP's work to support emergency physician mental health by clicking the links in the show notes. There's also a website, acep.org/results. You've been listening to the Built on Results podcast, a production of the American College of Emergency Physicians. We're back tomorrow. Until then, have a great day.